Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
It's Wednesday on USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast, which means it is time for our Trends Day series. And joining me on the podcast are our co-hosts for this, Charlie Coyner from First Down Playbook. He's the founder and CEO, as well as a former NFL coach. Charlie, good to be back here talking ball again.
Hey, Keith. Great to be here.
And then also joining us, as he does every week, is Zach Dunn to provide some of his analysis and his deep understanding of all the schemes that are out there. Zach, good to be talking ball with you as well.
Can't wait, Keith.
All right, guys. So today we're going to look at, again, I think some of the things that have come up again and again. We'll talk a little bit about the shallows and the shallow picks, some things we saw with bunch formations and the advantages there. I saw some stretch action and play action out of Minnesota from a spread set. We'll talk a little bit about that. And then something I know I've been bugging you guys about the last couple days here is I'm so intrigued by what Wake Forest is doing. And I could say it is not a trend because they are the only people I've ever seen do this, some of what they're doing. But we'll talk about exactly what we've seen on video there. So let's kick things off here with something we've seen throughout the course of the season. We saw Notre Dame do it, I believe, for a first down. But that idea of, you know, a zone read that turns into a speed option. So you have the back starts across and looks like he's going to come across like he normally does. And then he stops and gets into a pitch phase with the quarterback. And now you're attacking that end who normally the quarterback is reading. You're attacking him now in a different way, really, to get the ball out to the tailback there.
Yeah, Keith, we saw that in week one with Florida against Miami. You know, it's a play that I noted that the first time I saw it, I believe, was in 2015 when Oregon ran it under Mark Helfrich. You know, he said it starts out like, you know, the running back takes the J step, like it's going to be like a zone read, but then he puts his right foot on the ground or left foot on the ground, depending on which way they're going, and bursts back out on a speed option. Really, I don't think it's a read. I think more so it's just to flip it out there. But, you know, they will leave that defensive end unblocked, and that tackle who's climbing to the linebacker is looking to pin that linebacker inside. So they're looking to get the ball on the edge quickly. I mean, it's like a way to run zone read, but really better, because, I mean, you're not really reading that end anymore. You're just flipping the ball out there on the edge, and you're getting, you're getting numbers out there on the edge.
And we saw Florida try that again, and they didn't have as much luck as they did as when they ran it against Miami.
Is that the play that Clemson was running a couple weeks ago with Trevor Lawrence, too, getting the ball out there on the edge pretty quickly?
You know, that one was more of a power read, and where you typically are running the back across at that end, so both of you, the quarterback and the running back, running the same way. This isn't exactly the same thing. It's really with these guys starting across and looks like it's going to start as a zone read, that guy coming all the way across and then, you know, getting across either the A gap or the B gap, whatever he might be assigned to stretch over there. But this starts with him across and then he pops back out, gets into pitch phase right away. The idea, like Zach said, is get the ball on the edge pretty quickly there and just provide a different stressor to the defense.
Yeah, exactly, Keith. You know, it's like a zone read where the end crashes and the quarterback keeps it, except for now you're just pitching more to the running back immediately, like the quarterback would have kept it, and now he's on the edge quickly. I mean, it hits really quick. You don't block the end, the tackle climbs immediately and gets right on that backer. And what you end up having then is you end up having numbers up there on the perimeter. And if it's one high, then you're going to have numbers and you're going to outgap them. Then they're almost going to be able to run off the slot's block. Or if it's too high, you know, if safety's coming from 10 or 12 yards and he's in the field quick. Because, you know, usually it's running from 2x2. But yeah, it's a great play. And I think they like it when they know that end is going to try to play both. You know, he's going to try to play the cutback and the quarterback keep. So it's a way, you know, just to hurry up and, you know, act like you're going to give the zone and just flip to the back and just let him run the edge.
And we've talked about this a lot, Charlie, just providing different stressors to a particular defender. You know, when a guy only has to defend one thing, eventually in that game, he's going to start getting you. But now when there's multiple things that can happen to him and you get him just thinking a little bit, you kind of put yourself at an advantage from the offensive side of the ball.
Exactly. And that's where the plays are similar with the one I was thinking about, is that, yeah, you're looking at not only how to put that player in a conflict of assignment, but you're also looking at essentially over a period of time, you start seeing how a defense is going to play that a play or a similar play. Right. And so, you know, just like we always do on offense, we get in the room and try to figure out how to screw up the, you know, whatever the defensive coach has taught the player. That's why the game is so good. You sit there and look at what somebody's doing, and then the other side of the ball does something to adjust, and then the other side of the ball does something to adjust to that.
You know, the other thing I saw in the Notre Dame game, nothing new. We've been seeing it all over the country at every level, is the use of the shallow crosser. And again, done in a way that one of the guys coming across was meant to pick the defender. And, you know, interesting just the way they were trying to defend it here, that he didn't have to pick the middle guy. He had to really take care of the safety who was chasing him. So just that switch of assignments, which really leads us into some of the things the defense is doing to defend some of that. And we saw Michigan State trying to run the shallow crossers against Wisconsin, the number one defense in the country. And, you know, we talked about this one on our video version of this thing, All 22 Tuesday yesterday, which you could find over at blogs.firstdownplaybook.com. But Charlie, you pointed this one out and some of the things that Wisconsin did to take away the shallow cross.
Right. Yesterday we talked about, and we've been talking about this for weeks, just like you just said, you know, but once again, the defense is going to look at down and distance and formations and really just tendencies on the offensive part of it. The guys at Wisconsin are ranked number one in the country right now with defense. And the thing that we saw was that it looked like it was almost that defense was made for probably that play, understanding that, okay, down in distance, I think it was third and really long, where they were going to try to maybe get some of it back. So what are you going to do? Throw the ball down the field, or maybe it was second and long, and make it, you know, are they going to try to get half of it back? But what they were doing was essentially they established the four-man rush, but they knew that the center was going to go away from the back. And so the guy rushing in the A-gap, you know, he drew the block, the pass protection of the center and the guard, and the outside guys contained it. So after he drew that block, he just backed up, and this kid looked like he was about 6'7". He backed up and just right into the throwing lane, and just enough where if you make that quarterback, you know, pull it down or pause for a second, you know, that lane is now gone. I mean, that receiver is gone on across that formation. And then the other thing that they had obviously done a tremendous job and they worked hard on in practice was they had a whole player sitting there looking up for that, you know, looking that crossing route up. You know, he looked it up and ran with it, and they even had a, you know, the corner that was coming across actually dropped back in the coverage and became the whole player after he took the shallow cross. So different things that are, you know, you wouldn't think, okay, we're going to stop the shallow cross game with the A-gap play, right? Or, you know, we're going to add a little bit of hesitancy like you were just talking about. But I looked at, you know, the one of the things that I've always thought was always taught, you know, the times when I was on defense, the game that you were just talking about there, Keith, with Notre Dame and Southern Cal, one of the things that I was always taught, and I've coached linebackers and been around some good coaches on that side of the ball too, was just getting your hands on people. You know, one of the plays that we looked at in that game, you know, where they got the shallow crosser, well, it happened to be a tight end underneath everybody else, but linebacker did a pretty good job of getting a shot on him. But, you know, I think that's just another way of defending it. You'll find more and more coaches going that way. We play these 7-on-7 leagues all summer, and you don't see that a whole lot, right? You don't see a lot of defense because you just don't probably want to do that in 7-on-7. But when you get into a football game and you got crossing routes coming, I mean, it's still football. You got to get your hands on them, disrupt routes, knock them down if you can, if they're coming across the middle. And as long as that ball's not in the air, as far as I can remember, that's still legal. And then I'll just take one other. I'm not sure. I watched quite a bit of the LSU and Florida game, and the one thing I looked at there was, you know, we talk about these picks and rubs and crossing routes, and one of the interceptions that LSU got against Florida I looked and they did a little crossing deal out of the bunch, and I thought my first take on it was, well, that's holding on LSU. They held the outside wheel guy. But when I looked at it closer, I saw where essentially it all started with Florida guy trying to pick the LSU guy. So I guess where I'm going with all this is that I think that there are going to be some unique ways of stopping the shallow cross stuff, and that's going to be maybe ways that Jimmy Leonard and those guys over at Wisconsin were doing it this past week. But I also think that a lot of it's going to get to be where, you know, as you route read, you're going to need to disrupt. And, you know, if you're getting picked, you need to be physical with that guy picking or rubbing you too.
Yeah, I could say this. One of the toughest things we had to face all season long when I was coaching at BW was our own defense, who was a hands-on defense. And you know, if you're not releasing as the receiver, releasing those guys the right way, you're either cutting down your window or you're stopping your feet and the quarterback has to move on. And, you know, I think some of that collision, you know, collision of those guys within, you know, the legal areas is really a big tool for the defense. Because honestly, when you think about it, you know, a lot of offenses are out there training. What's one of the biggest things they use in practice to work on their routes? Well, routes on air. Air's an easy defense to beat. Now, when there's guys out there trying to reroute you and keep you from getting into the windows you want to get into, it becomes increasingly difficult, and you better be good at that as a receiver. You better be good at that as an offense to be able to win in those situations.
It's such a timing deal, and Keith, you know, your experience with the quarterbacks and all that, like you said it best, you don't hear that very much unless you're talking to coaches. That quarterback coach is telling that quarterback, yeah, if his route got disrupted, you better move on, because if you hang on it too long, what's going to happen is the timing, there's going to be a pick, and guess what, we're not going to blame that receiver that got rerouted, we're going to blame you for throwing a pick. So I do believe that a lot of it goes back to 7-on-7 that we're playing. You know, it's probably not a lot of rerouting going on in 7-on-7, but it'll be interesting to see. I can promise you the Alabamas of the world and teams like that are going to be working on rerouting. It should be interesting, you know, to see exactly how people continue to play all of these picks and rubs.
It's funny you say that, Charlie, about, you know, Bama and those guys working on the reroutes, because so much of what Nick Saban has done with his pass defense is all built around reroutes and getting guys out of places you don't want them to be. Like in cover three, you know, keep them out of the seams, or if they're in the seams, match them. You know, play rip whiz. And if you're playing cover two, then, you know, you're matching the seams. And when they play cut, you know, they're matching the seams, because they're all trying to keep people out of places that they don't want to be, and they're working to reroute guys out of windows that they don't want them to be in. You know, in this day and age, if you just spot drop, you know, you're going to watch quarterback complete passes all day. You can't just drop the zone and just sit there and vision the quarterback. It's way too much of a passing game now, and, you know, quarterbacks find holes very easily.
One of the last things I wanted to point out from the Notre Dame game was we've been talking all season long about the use of bunch formation and compressed formations. And so Notre Dame got into a bunch formation and ran a reverse to probably the fastest guy on the field. And we can all think back to those days where, you know, youth football, whether you're playing it or coaching it, and it was all about finding who the fastest guy is, get him the ball, get him heading towards the sideline, and you know, make a 90-degree turn and run away from everybody. Well, you know, it's very hard to do in real football now when, you know, you have the grown guys out on the field. However, when you have a speed guy like that and you compress your formations, you now start to create that stress that goes back to something that's very much like the junior high toss play. And it's exactly what happened on this thing. Like you have this guy who is able to outrun everybody because he's able to outflank them immediately from the compressed set.
So, yeah, what I liked about the play is, you know, I'll put the video in the show notes, was they also ran pin and pull the opposite way off of it. So, you know, they're pulling the safety and the backers away from it too. That is, usually you see this type of stuff, but usually you see it with zone blocking, but there, and it was pin and pull, which then puts even more stress on the slot back there to make sure, you know, he's getting deep enough so where the quarterback can put him the ball and he's not getting ran over by his own guard and backside guard that's pulling around. That was very creative though.
That's why I was laughing there, Zach. You know, having watched the play, it might as well have been student body right. So the people in the bunch just took off running. And there was one dude out there that's not blocked. Unfortunately, his number is 89, and this guy's number was 25 on Notre Dame's team. And we can all guess how that turned out.
Yeah, they turned that into a track meet real quick there.
Yeah, and 89 didn't win.
Yeah, Notre Dame ran that to number 25, which is the track star. I believe he finished as one of the top guys in the nation in the 200-meter dash.
Yeah, we had them earlier in the year where they were just running, you know, jet one way, pin and pull the other way, and letting the quarterback make the decision to which side the ball was going to. But, you know, that guy's been effective all year long and using his speed and being able to get in the end zone by just running faster than everybody. Well, let's take a look at some of these next plays. And I looked at, you know, wanted to see what Minnesota was doing. They're 6-0. They have, you know, I don't think they've had this good a start since, if I remember right, it was like in the 80s or 90s. It's been a long time. Maybe it was the 90s, but it's been a while since they've had a start like this. And I wanted to see exactly what they were doing. And we've talked a lot this year about the stretch play, the outside zone, the use of play action along with that. And, you know, the way we've talked about it, though, is a little bit more from the under center, which we saw trending and still is throughout the season. You know, we mentioned that Ohio State ran 25% of their plays from under center, and most of it was the outside zone along with play action. Well, Minnesota is very effective with what they're doing with their stretch play. They run it really well. What I like about it is, you know, when you think about a stretch play, you know, one of the first things I learned was to be able to get that back and the offensive line essentially running on that same track, that same angle, for that guy to really be able to see where he needs to go. And they do an excellent job of that. And I think they do so well with the other guys who are blocking on the perimeter, the way their tight ends are blocking, that now it creates some huge play action opportunities. And, you know, is able to pull out some plays, which we'll, again, put the video in our show notes of these guys running the stretch really well and then getting guys just wide open on play action.
Looking at the plays that you sent over, Keith, and looking at what they were doing, some of the things that jumped out at me is that, yeah, it's outside zone, but at times they were running it into the boundary. That, you know, you're stretching it over there, and you wouldn't think there would be enough real estate over there to get that done, but they certainly are. Yeah, very, very creative.
It was one of the plays, and we ran stretch back, man, I started running it in 2004. I was at Amherst Steel High School, and one of the play actions we learned off of it, I want to say I got it from Stan Parrish, and at the time he was at Ball State, was to, you know, run it to the boundary, run it to a nub tight end especially, and then that guy, you know, go up to block the safety or whoever he's getting corner, whoever is coming to force, and then, you know, stuttering for a second and running by. And they do exactly like that. They get their tight end open on a stretch play where they're running it to the boundary, he releases, and there's nobody there to cover him. As I was watching that, there was a cutback play that I was looking at. And Zach, I'll let you talk a little bit about that cutback play. But that led me to looking at some other things. I started looking at Wake Forest because I saw a highlight of them running a similar cutback play. And then what I found there, I'm still so intrigued by. So we'll get into Wake in a minute. But Zach, I mentioned that cutback play, and you and I talked a little bit about that the other day.
Yeah, Keith. So the first thing I noticed was it was a 4x1 formation, you know, if you want to label like that. It was a trip formation with the running back in a gun near position towards the tight end, who was in a wide off position in the trip set. And what they're doing is they're running same side inside zone, which I've seen the Chiefs dabble in a bit this year, the first few weeks. And something I noticed about that is, you know, it helps offset your zone tendency. So if you're a zone-heavy team, and, you know, say that the defense wants to set the 3 away from the back, or they want to set the 1 away from the back, they're going to base off where that running back is. But when you're on same side zone, like you're seeing here and like the Chiefs do, then you don't really know which side the zone's going to, so you can't be setting your front based on where the back is. Now you have to set it based on what you think, field boundary or tight end. But one thing I liked about it, so it's a 4x1 formation, you know, trips with gun near, and they run gun towards the trips, or they're on zone towards the trip side, and they're bringing that wild tight end, and they're sifting them backside, and, you know, the running back seems like it's taking a shuffle step to the side, and he's running zone to the right now. But what's interesting here is, you know, since the tight end's sitting back and they're one high, they got to fall back here. So the Will, the Mike, and the Sam or Overhang Star, what do you want to call them, they have to fall back because now with that tight end sifting back, now they've created an extra gap backside. So now what you're doing is that Sam backer right there who is playing the overhang outside of number three, you know, he's apex in between two and three. Now he has to fit the A gap. The Mike has to fall back into the B gap, and the Will has to fall back into either the C gap or, you know, he has to be the force player backside depending on what you do with the defensive end. So, I mean, so what happens is they would run same side zone, and the linebackers wouldn't fall back. You know, they would hang in their original gaps, and that tight end would come back, and he would, you know, he would sit on that backside defensive end. Well, that defensive end was just, he was trying to spill it every single time, and he was spilling it to nobody because they weren't falling back. So they were given the same side zone, but the ball was cutting back all, every single time back around the tight end on the sift block, and it was going for huge yardage because the defense was a gap short every single time. You know, that's something that I noticed the Chiefs doing, and it's something that the reason why I talked about it to start this out is back in 2013 when Michigan State played Ohio State in the Big Ten game, their whole game plan was based on where the running back was. They were setting the one opposite the running back because Ohio State wants to run zone at the three so they can cut back off the one because they run more like a zero, more like a veer read. So Michigan State, they would set the one away so the ball's cutting right back into a three technique. So that's when Ohio State went to the pistol because then defenses can't set their front based on where the back is. You know, this is kind of just another way to do that, you know, instead of running zone always, you know, so if the back's all set to the right and the zone's going to the left, now, you know, the back's all set to the right and the zone's going to the right. Then, you know, you can take a tight end and sift them backside still, and now you're really screwing with guys because, you know, pre-snap, they're not thinking that they're falling back based on where the tight end is and the back is being on the same side. You know, they're thinking the zone's coming to the left, they don't think they're going to be falling back. But then when the tight end sifts and the zone goes opposite way, and now they got to fall back, and the backers are slow to fall back. You know, that backside defensive end, he's, for some reason, he's trying to spill it. I guess that's his rule there, and he's throwing it to nobody. So the Chiefs didn't have a lot of success with it because they kind of ditched it after week two, but Minnesota's had quite a bit of success with it. I mean, the clips I've seen, the huge yardage off of it, and really helps when the defense is in one high.
So that led to me searching a little bit more for this play, and I saw Wake Forest doing a version of it, but then I started to look at Wake Forest very closely, and I can honestly say I have never seen anything like what these guys are doing. To me, this is very innovative, both in what they're doing in the backfield, but also how they're marrying it to the line. And to me, it's a new strategy in how to attack a defense. And it, as I've thought about this more and more, I've watched more of this film, I've really see some of the genius behind it. It is so unorthodox. I don't know that it is, you know, able to be defended completely the way that we think about defending these plays. And they run stretch, they run power, they run dart or a form of counter and an inside zone play. And I'm going to tell you this. So we'll start with the backfield. And what I noticed right away is one of the slowest meshes I've ever seen in football. And if you think of this, these guys are literally walking up to the line of scrimmage. So you have the quarterback catching the snap. He's putting it in the belly of the running back. And both of them walk. They do not have a sense of urgency. Literally walk up to the line of scrimmage. And then eventually, at some point, he lets it go. And it feels like these guys are walking up forever. So for me, I always start to look at, okay, what's the timing on this? And why are they doing it? So that was one of the first things I look at. And I put about, I don't know, 12 or 15 plays on the stopwatch. And the shortest mesh they had was 1.62 seconds. The longest one I found was like just under 2.5 seconds. So a very long time for that ball to get to the line of scrimmage and that decision to be made. And some of those were pulling through the RPO. I'll get to that in a second. So I wanted to know, how did that compare against a typical one? And again, pulling out, you know, some zone plays, you know, typically that thing is under 1.3 seconds consistently. The mesh point of a normal zone read. You have the quarterback and the running back together for, you know, let me preface this. This is from snap to decision. So snap to decision for Wake Forest, 1.62 all the way up to 2.5 seconds, average of 2.06 seconds. Typical, about 1.3 or even less, slightly higher if you're throwing an RPO, but I didn't see anything really over the 1.5 second mark too much. So it's distinctly different. So I want to pause right there. That's the first thing that I noticed here, is that just an incredibly long mesh time. Now, then I started to wonder, what is the offensive line doing? Because that is a long time to hold up. And as I looked at it, a couple things popped out. When they were throwing the RPO, nobody was downfield. So I go back through and look at that. Are they actually just pass blocking? No, they're doing exactly what they do on the run block. These guys are literally, they are not firing off the ball. They're taking their zone steps. They're taking whatever steps go along with that scheme and letting everything declare a gap. Once it declares a gap, they're actually using the defense, you know, they're using their movement against them to basically distort and create the running lanes. And so the back and the quarterback, as they're looking at this, are very slow. They're waiting for gaps to declare. Once the gaps to declare, they let the ball go, and that running back, or the quarterback if he keeps it, sees exactly where the lane is, and it can hit in different places. They certainly are trying, they're designed to get in certain places, but you might see a power go all the way out the back door because everything is moved. So you think of, well, blitz the mesh point, blitz the gap. They're actually inviting that. I showed you, Zach, a play where the center snapped the ball, he was completely uncovered. He took his steps and he actually waited at the line of scrimmage for the linebacker to come to him.
Keith, as I watched a little bit of it and didn't get to watch near as much as you did, I guess the one thing that jumps out at me is that, is it and I'm going to ask more questions than talk, which is maybe unique for me, but is it always a zone scheme, or is it different? What other schemes do they use up front with this? Or is it?
So they go stretch with this, typical stretch, like, you know, these guys are running to reach everybody, and they give the ball so far behind the guys who are blocking stretch that sometimes he just gets the ball and runs straight up field. And, you know, typically where you would cut that thing, you know, it's never really a cutback on a stretch play. It's a cut up, but he cuts it up to no one because everything is actually moved with the stretch, and the quarterback and the running back are still sitting behind that thing, or the quarterback's throwing an RPO with nothing in front of him, an incredible way to get your quarterback vision. They run it with power. So your typical power scheme with somebody, usually that tight end, kind of, he's not necessarily kicking off, but he's putting himself in position to wall that guy off from coming to the inside. And then somebody pulling around, guard pulling around. And then I saw like a more of a dart play. I'm not sure that I saw the tackle all that much, but I would see the Y off the ball pulling around on the dart play to run that as well. And then a form of inside zone where there are no pullers. And they're doing that, Charlie, with all of their plays, this kind of timing.
And so it's more or less, it's the blocking scheme can change up. It's more kind of, just to pick a different word than scheme, it's more of a philosophy about letting the defense, like you said, declare where their gaps are. Now, I guess I watched, like I said, some of it, and it looked like there were a lot of middle field open schemes they were doing it against. Is it because they know that if they do that, they're going to be a gap short, and they're just trying to make sure they let that declare? Or and once again, you're not in the Wake Forest meetings either, but I'm curious about this. I want to look at it a lot more this week.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure about that. I hadn't gotten too much into, you know, what was going on in the secondary. I was really looking at the box and how they were able to, I mean, they're running it against multiple fronts. I saw the tight front, kind of like Iowa State does, with a linebacker at five and then a safety down, you know, maybe behind him 5 yards, and both of those guys trying to hit those gaps hard. And they're getting absorbed in what looks like a wall. I mean, these guys are really like forming a shield here, and there's going to be a hole in the fence, and that's where they're going to keep it. Now, the interesting thing I saw a few times, and this would work a little bit in what they were doing with some short yardage, is that as these guys are walking the ball up to the line of scrimmage, they would see potentially an unblocked defender in front of them. Could be a safety, could be a linebacker. When that would happen, the quarterback would essentially push the running back through, and he'd turn into a lead blocker. And now they had a hat for a hat again. I mean, it's when you look at it, it's pure genius, but I've never seen anything like it.
No, it's, once again, having watched a little bit of it, but need to watch a lot more. It's exactly one of the things that I saw, is that yeah, at some point, you know, that if they keep going up in there, then it turns into almost what we talked about yesterday on All 22 Tuesday, where, you know, we have tight ends coming across and they might be whamming, they might be leading, they might be the backside, or they might even get the ball. We talked about that last week, right? Well, this is almost like a very delayed version, just on the surface, what I'm seeing, that, you know, that back could be getting the ball, he could be lead blocking, he could be rapping, but the pace of it, just the pace of it, has got to be a little different. You know, defenses than anyone I've ever been on, and anyone that's any good is always like, you know, go, 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 hit, 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 you know, aggressive, aggressive. And all of a sudden, I don't know, what are they going to do when the coach says, you just got to be patient. You know, it's almost like a different kind of option responsibility. So, yeah, they obviously are onto something there.
Yeah, that is exactly it. Well, and I'm thinking ahead, Charlie, that exact thing. Okay, how do you defend it? Well, maybe you use kind of a two-gap technique and declare your gap late. Like, I don't know. I'm thinking of different ways. You got to slow your play down a little bit in order to be there to close where they're trying to run, you know. And so what would I do in that case? Well, I wouldn't be surprised if people started doing that you would see them start to mix up the tempo of their plays. Because what would you do if somebody was sitting back? Well, I'd hit him with some kind of quick hitter right away. So there's a lot of possibilities. The other thing was the RPO with this. And again, I'm going to study it more. We'll talk about it more on the podcast as the season goes on. But the RPO is different the way they run it too. When you think about RPO, you got to get that ball out pretty quickly, like under 2 seconds. Well, I mean, they're taking up to 2.5 seconds to throw the football. When you think about route timing and how routes calibrate, you know, those are your intermediate routes that you're able to throw now in these RPOs. And you actually see Wake Forest running speed digs at 10 yards, speed digs to get into the voids that are created by guys leaving. And they're, you know, the quarterback is walking this thing up to the line. He sees the hole, and that guy run into the window, and man, he's putting it right in there.
And I think that if you really keep looking at it, once again, this is guess because you watched a lot more. That may very well be the genesis of where this came from, because, you know, I've been on the kick a little bit over first down playbook that there still is room for a play action pass out there now. You know, everything doesn't have to be an RPO to where the offensive coordinator, you know, takes the ball completely out of his hands where the ball's going. It's up to the quarterback. And really, if you want to be honest about it, it's up to the defense, you know, where that ball's going to go. And the ball doesn't get thrown down the field very often because you just can't, you know, in different rules and different leagues. But if you stop and think about what you just said, I think that coaches, you sit around, you're thinking like, well, if we're going to run an RPO, could we do it in some way to where we get more than 5 yards or we get more than first down? Can we create explosive RPOs? And this would certainly be a way of doing it if your run game could hold up. And based on the clips you sent me against North Carolina and a couple other teams, it certainly is holding up.
Yeah, the problem with like getting to that third level read, and he's definitely reading a safety in this, is that usually by that time, you have a guy illegally downfield. You got to be very careful with what scheme you run it with. But all of their schemes are holding true. And they are a very physical team. Now, they're undersized. By undersized, I mean they don't have a guy who's over 300 pounds. They're all about 290, 295. But these guys, you know, Nick Tobacco, the offensive line coach there, he does an incredible job with them. I know he's had some influences by John Strollo. A lot of what John Strollo uses are some of the things that you see in our contact system for blocking, which is about, you know, forced deflection, which is about distorting defenders and being able to get underneath them and use your hips. So while I don't want this to seem like they're playing some kind of a soft scheme, these guys are being physical, but they're being very patient in how they do it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to set. Were there many clips of the Louisville game, or did you get a chance to look at that?
Yeah. No, Charlie, I got so caught up in this, and I got up early this morning. I stayed up late last night watching all these games. I think I've watched all their season now, and going back through and watching clips again and again. Like I said, I put them on the stopwatch, and you know they hadn't turned the ball over really. They've done a great job all season, but they had a couple turnovers in the Louisville game. They have a great passing game that goes along with this too, but very effective in the run game. And you see these guys just again walking up the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden that back is out the gate you know, gashing the defense for some yards. And I mean, very efficient way of running it. It's like I said, it's so unorthodox. We think about run game and getting off the ball, but these guys are showing that there's a different way. And, you know, I would say this, if you're listening to this podcast and you think you can slow down your mesh and it's going to be effective, I'm telling you, no, right now. They've married everything together with what they're doing with their RPOs, their read game, and with their offensive line. So if it's something that this is piquing your interest, you got to go study it. And, you know, I hope these guys are somewhere around the country, Warren Ruggiero or Dave Clawson or Nick Tabaka, talking about this offseason. I really love to understand how they came up with this and, you know, what the rest of it is, because I'm sure there's more.
No one can argue with their success. I know that much. They're having a heck of a year so far.
Well, we got a little bit off track. I mean, that's not necessarily something that's trending right now, but something I thought worth bringing up. And again, check out blogs.firstdownplaybook.com for some of the content we've put over there and to see all that Charlie is doing. And I mentioned the contact system. Go to footballdevelopment.com to see all that technique. And there's drills you can use right now, drills you can use in the off season. Just a great way of blocking. So, Charlie, it was great to talk ball with you again. Zach, thank you again for your analysis, and I look forward to talking with you guys again next week.
Look forward to it, Keith. And one thing about football, if one person's doing it or one team is doing it, it'll be a trend next week. Somebody else will be doing it, so you're just ahead of the curve.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.